This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're going to do something a little different today. I want to step away from our normal market analysis and talk about something fun. Spring is here, and amusement parks across the country are opening up their gates. So that means it's time to do our annual talk on amusement parks and roller coasters. And note, there is an investment angle to all of this as well. Cedar Fair, the parent of Cedar Point, and Six Flags, we all know the Six Flags chain, are finalizing their merger later this summer. And that means those two companies will have a new ticker symbol and will be merged as one. But there's also other companies in the mix too. We all know about Walt Disney, ticker DIS. And then another player in the amusement park roller coaster game, a lot of people might not necessarily even think about, is SeaWorld. And SeaWorld also owns the two Busch Gardens, the one in Florida and Virginia. Their parent company is now called United Parks and Resorts, and the ticker on that stock is PRKS. But again, today, it's all about the fun and, of course, the roller coasters. I'm Andy Gersher, and this is Gains. All right, we're talking amusement parks and roller coasters. And, of course, we got to bring on Andrew Stillwell, writer and podcast host at coaster101.com out of Charlotte, North Carolina. And again, that website, coaster101.com. Andrew, great to have you on the Gains podcast.
Hey, happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about roller coasters, amusement parks, and even the big merger between the two big amusement park operators that, of course, would be Cedar Fair and Six Flags. But before we even get into that, as we kick off the podcast today, Andrew, tell us a little bit about yourself, the podcast, and of course, coaster101.com.
Yeah. Like you mentioned, my name is Andrew Stillwell. I've been writing for coaster101.com as what I like to refer to as my unpaid side hustle since 2013. And I've always been a huge fan of roller coasters and riding, and found something after college that allowed me to kind of combine those passions. And the way the podcast kind of got its start is it was during COVID. I think we were very tired of baking bread, and just like a lot of other people in the world, it was like 2020, we can order a microphone off Amazon, it'll be here. And so we started the podcast in 2020. And usually is a weekly show. Sometimes real life gets in the way, but other than that, we're coming up on 150 episodes. So I'm going to ask you not to count the weeks between 2020 and now, because then it wouldn't be a weekly show. But
right.
we try to cover a little bit of everything, both on the website and the podcast, as it relates to roller coasters and theme parks. So interviews, reviews, news, other words that end in EWS. We try to cover it all at Coaster 101.
How can people find your podcast?
We're actually available pretty much anywhere you can find podcasts, you know, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, We're on YouTube as well. We have an audio version of our YouTube. It's on our YouTube channel at Coaster 101. If you type Coaster 101 into any podcast or podcatcher, you'll be able to find us pretty easily. And if not, head to the website. It's coaster101.com/podcast. You'll be able to find a player and all that as well online.
You're also on X, and I've been following you. You've been traveling around a little bit. It seems like at least the past week, hitting. I saw you in one of my old home parks, Busch Gardens, Williamsburg, Virginia. Tell us your X handle and what you've been kind of doing the last week. I've been following you on Twitter, and yeah, I know you're in Busch Gardens. I saw some really cool pics of Loch Ness. So just tell us kind of what you've been doing.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to follow, we'll start with Coaster 101, and just like all of our other social platforms, it's at Coaster 101. If you want to follow me personally, it's Stillwell, at Stillwell, S-T-I-L-W-E-L-L. There's a lot of people who follow me for roller coasters. There's a lot of people who follow me because I tweet, or whatever verb we're using for that communication now, about UNC Tar Heels athletics, because I'm a big college sports fan. And there's a lot of people who just know me who, when I tweet about one of those two things, they're really confused because they follow me about the other thing. Recently I was at Busch Gardens Williamsburg for the media day for Loch Ness Monster. And for your listeners who might not know, when it opened in 1978, I believe was the year, Loch Ness Monster was the tallest and steepest roller coaster in the world at the time. And the kind of the calling card for this ride is it has interlocking loops. It was the first roller coaster to debut with interlocking loops and remains the only one. There was another one, I think, at Worlds of Fun in Kansas City called Orient Express that had interlocking loops, but it's since left us. But with Loch Ness Monster, the park has breathed kind of a new life into the storyline of the Loch Ness Monster. So now, instead of just riding a roller coaster, you're kind of immersed into this new story where you're part of a Loch Ness expedition. You go past some show scenes before you kind of ascend the lift hill. And it tells more of a story, and you're involved in this Loch Ness expedition, and the roller coaster trains are referred to in the queue as lake cruisers. And at the very end of the ride, you go through this cave and you can kind of see the Loch Ness Monster for the first time, but you come out of the cave, you hit that second loop right before the ride ends, and they've got this giant, you know, uber realistic sculpture of the Loch Ness Monster. I don't know if you can call the Loch Ness Monster realistic, but the way they've made this sculpture and statue out to look is it is right there on the right hand side, and it roars at you as you ride past.
Growing up in the Washington D.C. area, King's Dominion, and then a little farther away, Busch Gardens, both kind of what we would consider our two home parks. But the thing about Busch Gardens is we, even on the Noon Business Hour, we've talked about travel dupes, you know, and we called Busch Gardens the travel dupe for Walt Disney, because you get a lot of the good things that you would get at Walt Disney and that European theming, and there's a lot of other cool stuff to do in that area, Williamsburg as well, but it's a lot easier to get around and a lot less expensive. So certainly a good park. Thoughts on that real quick?
Yeah, for sure. I think that's an apt description. I think when you look at the term of theme park, you obviously want a park that has a theme. I mean, that's what it comes to at its core. And Busch Gardens Williamsburg, I think for 20 plus years running, has been named the world's most beautiful theme park by the Golden Ticket Awards, which is kind of like an industry standard voted on by people who cover the industry and people who are in the industry. So it is an incredibly beautiful park. Like you mentioned, it has a European theming. But it truly, as far as what a regional amusement park would be considered, which is pretty much anything outside of Florida and California, it's got truly a little bit of everything. It's got 10 really, really good roller coasters that kind of range from something like a kiddie ride that's themed to Grover from Sesame Street. They just opened Dark Coaster last year, which is an indoor launched family roller coaster. But then they've got things like Alpengeist, which at one point may still be the tallest inverted, you know, dangling feet roller coaster. They've got Pantheon, which is the world's fastest multi-launch coaster, or was, again, at the time when it opened. And on top of that, the food is really good. They've got some really, really good shows. Another thing I always tell people when they visit Busch Gardens Williamsburg is they have to check out Celtic Fire, which is an Irish dancing show that I think has also won awards for kind of like best theme park show in anywhere in the world. So, and that's right there in Williamsburg, Virginia. So to me, you know, living in North Carolina, I've been visiting Busch Gardens Williamsburg off and on for about 20 years now. And I'm kind of like you. I can refer to it as almost a home away from home park. I mean, I am here down in Charlotte, and Carowinds is great as well. But making the drive, it was just about 5 hours door to door. And I try to make it up there at least once a year just because how much I love that park.
All right. And so talking about the industry at large, we had that big merger the end of last year, Cedar Fair, you know, parent of Cedar Point, and then, of course, Six Flags and all their parks as well. I've been told that merger is going to be completed June-ish, July, sometime this summer. From a fan standpoint, do you see this as a good thing, a bad thing? I got to think the good thing is that you got a season pass, which gives you a ton of parks if you go that route. But I was curious, is that take away from competition? What's your kind of your thought on the merger, and do you think there will be any kind of impact on the consumer?
Yeah, I think I'm still kind of in wait and see mode, and I know just like you, I saw that merger is supposed to go through before the end of Q2, which I guess would be June of this year. And I feel like both parks have a lot of good things going for them. Obviously, both have a world-class collection of roller coasters. And if this mythical season pass that we as enthusiasts, you know, obviously we seek out the season pass that gets us into more than one park. And a lot of regional amusement parks, you buy the season pass because you're going to go to, you know, Carowinds four or five times during the summer, but you're not going to go anywhere else. But as coaster enthusiasts, they do offer this kind of multi-park pass, both Cedar Fair and Six Flags. And if they can come up with a way to not only make this an affordable option for everyone, and you can get access to, I think, all 12 Cedar Fair parks and all, I want to say 11 or 12 Six Flags. I don't have those numbers off the top of my head, but it's more than 20 total. And it gives you access, I think, somewhere upwards of 200 plus roller coasters. And for me, as a coaster enthusiast, it's a no-brainer. Like I mentioned, I think both parks have their positives. I know Cedar Fair in recent years has put more emphasis on entertainment, and I know all of their parks have executive chefs, so you're not dealing with the, we'll call it chicken fingers, hamburgers, hot dogs, and pizza, the kind of the big four main staples. So I think there will be benefits for both fans of Cedar Fair and fans of Six Flags and fans of the industry overall. I still am, again, waiting to see how it actually shakes out. I know the stock symbol is going to change. Certain leadership is going to stay in place. But I'm kind of waiting for the final thoughts before I'm able to make my final opinion on what's going to happen. Right now I'm excited, but it's, we'll call it cautious optimism.
I'm there with you because I'm a big believer that competition generally is very good for pretty much any industry. And I liked how you had, you know, Cedar Fair going up against Six Flags, them competing, them trying to outdo each other, maybe coming through and specializing in different things. So it's, you know, that's the one thing that I think has hurt the industry in a way, but it's probably kept a lot of these places still open, is the consolidation. When I was a kid, there were small amusement parks all over, and each one of these, you know, parks were run independently, and that was kind of cool. And then, you know, you could definitely see the game of parks, though, upping once you started seeing consolidation and then, you know, money being put into these. But there's part of me that, you know, I like still places, you know, and what comes to mind, Bay Beach Amusement Park, which is like a small amusement park in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Knoebels, you know, that's in Pennsylvania. That's, you know, run by the Knoebels family. Hershey Park is another one that comes to mind. That's actually owned by the Hershey Company. There's a private trust. Dollywood, there's another one. So I do like having lots of different ownership. I think it does kind of keep the industry spicy. But again, so these big, big companies can and make those mega, mega investments. So just kind of thoughts on what I was just talking about there.
Yeah, I think again, the mega corporation by, you know, Six Flags and Cedar Fair merging, that means you also have the combined creative and capital resources for new parks. And while the competition may or may not exist, I feel like amusement parks are pretty unique because at the end of the day, it's not necessarily the amusement parks are competing with one another, but they're competing for people's time. I think
fair enough. They're competing with every other form of entertainment. Go ahead.
No, you're good. Yeah, they're competing every other form of entertainment. They're competing with sports games on the weekends, or, you know, kids and families either participating or going to, you know, a football or baseball game. They're competing with zoos. They're competing with movie theaters. And I think in recent years, this innovation that we've seen in theme parks, again, we're not just a lot of times getting roller coasters that are built on a parking lot. And sometimes we are, but a lot of times now the roller coasters have a story. The dark rides, they've got a story as well. There's heavily themed. There's been, like I said, emphasis on the food, the entertainment, to kind of over, you know, better overarch and kind of create that total experience where it is competition for everything else that the world has going on. I still think there is a place out there, though, for the kind of the smaller amusement park. But even somewhere like Dollywood that you mentioned, they're part of a smaller chain, the Hershen Family Entertainment. So it's Dollywood and Silver Dollar City and Kentucky Kingdom and I believe Wild Adventures down in Valdosta, Georgia. So they're a smaller chain. But again, the consolidation with a lot of these parks, I think it means you've got combined resources. And so if the overall company does well, it could say, you know, a park like Dorney Park in Allentown, Pennsylvania, for example. For years, Dorney Park did not have a new roller coaster. Their last new built from the ground up roller coaster that wasn't transported from another park was back in 2005. And now, you know, Cedar Fair coming out of COVID has done really well, and they've decided to throw Dorney Park a little bit of a bone right now. And Dorney Park has opened Iron Menace, which is, you know, the region, Northeast region's only floorless dive coaster. It's got a beyond vertical drop. And there are all of these, again, innovations that have happened. And it is at, you know, not only just the big parks anymore, there are smaller parks that are building, you know, world-class roller coasters. And so at the end of the day, it's a really good time to be a fan. Even somewhere like, I want to bring up Fun Spot Atlanta.
I was just going to say, you talk about small parks that are building major, major roller coasters. There you go, Fun Spot.
Yeah, Fun Spot Atlanta. They just built Airy Force One, which is named after the park's owner. But it's a Rocky Mountain Construction steel coaster that has all these inversions, and it's built basically in a park that had a go-kart track and some arcades and like a old steel roller coaster.
Yeah, I mean, these places, Fun Spot was a giant arcade. They still have a really, really good arcade, by the way. But these are like your local amusement centers, and then they started putting like legit rides on that space. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, and even somewhere like down in Austin, Texas, at Circuit of the Americas at the race car track, they're building a full-blown amusement park there that's got – they've recently broken ground on this coaster Palindrome, which is a shuttle coaster that kind of goes over the main the main entrance there. You've got this Mattel Adventure Park out in Phoenix that has all of this Mattel IP, brings an amusement park with two really world-class roller coasters coming to Phoenix. So it isn't just the big parks anymore. I mean, there are smaller places all around the country that are popping up that are kind of luring in tourists, families especially, but the coaster enthusiast as well, which is, again, really, really exciting time to be a fan of this industry.
All right, we got to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Andrew. But hey, be sure to subscribe, follow, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts if that's an option for you. And as always, subscribe and turn on those notifications so you know when a new Gaines episode drops. We drop Gaines episodes on Wednesday mornings. We'll be right back with Andrew after the break.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code MAN at checkout. That's harrys.com, code MAN. Enjoy!
All right, back with Andrew Stillwell, writer and podcast host at coaster101.com out of Charlotte. So Andrew, real quick question, and this is a term that's really big in the coaster rider scene, is credits. Explain what coaster credits are for those who are enthusiasts, and how many credits do you have?
Yeah, so it's, if I can get really nerdy here, coaster credits to something else, it's a lot like Pokemon, and their motto for years was gotta catch them all. And so every unique roller coaster around the world, and there's, you know, thousands and thousands of roller coasters, every unique roller coaster is its own credit. And so if you ride a coaster, you get that credit, you keep going, you're on your way. I think that's the easiest way to put it. Right now, and because I keep track of these things like the nerd that I am, I am at 307 roller coasters, unique all around the United States that I've ridden. I haven't gotten out of the country yet to ride a roller coaster. I've been out of the country, but never to ride a roller coaster. But yeah, just over 300. I hit the magic 300 last summer. And so now the goal is to get to 400 and 500 and so on.
And is there a place that you, like, that fans keep, like, is there some kind of leaderboard or some place that maybe keeps the stats or maybe keeps your stats for you? And then the one other thing is you only get the credit for a ride or for a roller coaster once. You ride it, you get the credit, you're done, even though you may ride the thing 20 times over a weekend. But, yeah, explain those two things.
Yeah, everybody kind of counts credits their own unique way. There are some people who, you know, track lifetime rides on something. And I know there's a guy down here in Charlotte, Carowinds, his Twitter handle is like that_Fury_guy, who's ridden Fury 325 here at Carowinds, I want to say upwards of like 7,000 times in the past 9 years.
Oh, my gosh.
It may not be that high, but it's a number that is, like,
even if it's half, that's insane.
Yes. So there are people who count the lifetime rides, and there are people who count the one-off credits. And I try to stick to just the one-off. You ride it once, it counts. You know, I've been walked off a roller coaster before, and that doesn't count, which is kind of it's a bummer, but that's on me more so than the coaster itself. But there are websites. I like to use a website called coaster-count.com. Really easy and, you know, user-friendly. It's got all the roller coasters kind of cataloged in, and you can kind of check them off. as you go. But I know people who use Excel spreadsheets. I know Coaster101.com has an Excel spreadsheet that they use. That, you know, we've offered to our readers, but there are all sorts of different ways to kind of keep track of your credits. I know there's an app called, I think, Log Ride, which is basically to log the rides that you ride. So, but Coaster Dash Count is what I use. And, it's really good. It kind of tells you where the park is. It allows you to keep track of the date that you rode it. And I've started, you know, in the last couple of years, cataloging the date. Ever since I started writing for Coaster 101, it was like, yeah, I've ridden all of these coasters in the past, but as I've been actually keeping track and keeping count of everything, I've got it by date. It keeps them in order that you rode them. It even has like a rare coaster point system where if you're one of the few people who has ridden a roller coaster, you get points. I don't know what the points are for or what their value is, but for example, there, and it's only people who have Coaster Count accounts who have ridden this, but there was a roller coaster at Wet Wild Emerald Point, which is a water park in Greensboro, North Carolina. It opened in the early 2000s, was only open for like a year and a half before it closed, but I was lucky enough as a kid to ride it. And according to this, I'm one of six to 10 riders who has ridden this coaster on this website.
So, oh, that's pretty cool, actually.
Yeah.
Now, moving over to our favorite parks. You know, we were talking about home parks. Here in the Chicago area, our home park is Six Flags Great America. We also have, for me, I would also count Indiana Beach, which is just an old school that was actually even closed for a little while and then brought back to life. And then we have Cedar Point, the ultimate place for people who love roller coasters right down the road. But there are, so that just kind of covers the Midwest. And then there's some other ones in Indiana. And then, you know, if you start venturing out more, you could go to Kings Island. As you start heading towards the East Coast, you go down south more, there's Dollywood. So Chicago is a great place to experience parks and lots of credits. But let's just talk about some of our favorite parks and across the country. And let's start with your home park, since you're based out of Charlotte. Carowinds. That's a top-notch park, that has been under, if I'm not mistaken, that's been under the Cedar umbrella this whole time, correct?
Yep. It was owned by Paramount Parks up until 2006, and there's a whole long story. It was the
Paramount Parks. So that was like your Kings Island, Kings Dominion as well in that, right?
Yep. Yeah, and they were, so up until 2006 when Cedar Fair purchased the Paramount Parks. So Carowinds has kind of been under that Cedar Fair leadership, coming up on 20 years here in a little bit. But the unique thing about Carowinds, it is the only amusement park, at least anywhere. I mean, this is how they brand it, and I haven't found another one, but it's situated in two states. So it is, straddles the border of North and South Carolina. They've got, I think, 14, 15 roller coasters. I should know this, being that it's my home park. It's got 14, so I was close. Its calling card really is Fury 325, which has been the Golden Ticket Award winner for best steel roller coaster every year. It's opened since, I believe, 2016. It opened in 2015. It won best new coaster that year and has won best steel roller coaster every year since. But that's, 325 feet in the air, speeds of 95 miles per hour, I think. But it just, you haul across the state line, and it doesn't go upside down, but the speed and forces are well worth it. Also, Copperhead Strike, which opened in 2019, that's a multi-launch coaster that has five inversions and a really, really cool theme and backstory. They've kind of built like this, they call it a corn farm, but the underlying story is that you're stumbling upon a moonshine operation, which kind of ties really well into that, that Carolina's story. So I think Yeah, Fury and Copperhead Strike. They've got Afterburn, which used to be called Top Gun. They've got Thunderstriker, which used to be themed to Dale Earnhardt and was called the Intimidator. So there's some really, really solid roller coasters at Carowinds, and I think I love having it as my home park. I joke that, you know, it's nice to have Fury 325 in my backyard, even if that backyard is 40 minutes long.
Right, right. And then, of course, you know, actually, Carolina Harbor, too, if you like water parks, pretty decent.
Very true. Yeah, I'm not much of a water park person, but Carolina Harbor, they rethemed, I believe it was 2016, and they've given it this, again, this whole new theming and backstory, and it went from, I think, an Australian theme. I think it was called Boomerang Bay under Paramount, but it went, they changed it to Carolina Harbor and, you know, rethemed the heck out of everything. So it is, it's a really, really exciting and fun water park if you're into that sort of thing. Unfortunately, I'm just not, but
fair enough. Also, since we're talking, you know, some of the Cedar Fair portfolio, and you mentioned the Paramount thing, we mentioned King's Dominion, that's in Virginia, and then mm-hmm. King's Island, which is in the Cincinnati area. Those Paramount parks were really, really good. It was a nice pickup by Cedar to get them in their portfolio. Some of my favorite parks.
For sure. And yeah, King's Dominion, I love. Another one of those kind of home away from home parks for me. Another really, really world-class roller coaster collection, I think. But put King's Dominion, King's Island both. I think they're some of the best parks, some of my favorite parks I've ever visited. I can't get enough of, I guess they call it Project 305 now. That's kind of one of the most intimidating, but intense roller coasters I've ever been on. It, like Thunderstriker at Carowinds used to kind of have a Dale Earnhardt theme. And over at King's Island, I really love Mystic Timbers, their wooden coaster. I think that is a park that has some really, really great wooden coasters between the Beast and the Racer and Mystic Timbers. But for me, I really, really like Mystic Timbers. I think it's my favorite ride at that park.
And then moving, one other, the granddaddy in the Cedar Fair chain is Cedar Point out of Sandusky. And that's really within range of Chicago, a popular place for a lot of Chicago roller coaster enthusiasts to head out to. Thoughts on Cedar Point?
Cedar Point, it's like you said, it's kind of the mecca for roller coaster enthusiasts. They've got, I think, 18 or 19 roller coasters, some of the biggest and baddest anywhere. Right now, their new for 2024 roller coaster, Top Thrill 2, is currently undergoing some maintenance fixes by the rides manufacturer, Zamperla. So it opened for a little bit. They realized something wasn't quite necessarily right. And so the park and the manufacturer are working to kind of rectify that, which is obviously safety and rider comfort are kind of the most important things when a new roller coaster opens. So glad they're working on that. But, you know, you've got coasters like Steel Vengeance, another one of those Rocky Mountain Construction hybrid coasters that's a steel track on a wood body. You've got Maverick, which is right there on Lake Erie, another super fast multi-launch coaster, amazing ride experience. Millennium Force, another one that is the first full circuit roller coaster, I believe, to hit the 300-foot mark. And another one, as you're kind of ascending that lift hill, you have this panoramic view of Lake Erie because you're right there on the peninsula. I can't say enough good things about Cedar Point. It's been far too long since I've been there. I was last there, I think, in 2018. So in normal times, it feels like it's been like 3 or 4 years, but in reality, it's actually 7 because you add the 4 years with COVID. But Cedar Point is a really good time. I'm hoping I can get back up there soon, because I didn't get to ride Steel Vengeance when I was there, and it was another one of those coasters I got walked off because I've got a little bit of a gut that's not as kind in the restraint department a little bit. But I love Cedar Point, love it. I'm really excited to get back up there at some point soon, hopefully.
So, you know, we were talking about the merger. On the other side of the equation is, of course, the Six Flags Parks, Six Flags Great America, Gurney right here in Chicago, in our backyard here in Chicago. A bunch of great parks under the Six Flags banner as well. Your thought on Six Flags Parks, your favorite, you know, and even thoughts on Six Flags Great America?
So Six Flags Great America, I visited there in 2019, and unfortunately, I don't get up to Chicago. I love Chicago, by the way, as a city. I'm not just saying that to appeal to your audience. I've been a couple of times, had a blast every time I was there. Six Flags Great America, rather, is great. And I just, forgive the pun, but they've got, you know, 15 really, really great roller coasters. They've got some classics like the Demon. They've got the all-new Max Force. But then some more modern rides like X-Flight. Their Viper wooden coaster is really good. And Raging Bull, I think, is a sneakily underrated roller coaster.
I totally love Raging Bull. It's one of my favorites there, actually.
Yeah. Six Flags as a chain, I appreciate them for the wide variety of roller coasters they have, and I think that might be the nicest thing I can say. It's not that I'm anti Six Flags by any stretch of the imagination, but given the choice between a Cedar Fair park and a Six Flags park, I mean, I'm only in Charlotte, I'm only 4 hours from my nearest Six Flags, which is Six Flags over Georgia. And I have not been there while it's been operating. I've been for some special events and things like that, but I have not been there since like 2010. So it's not
that speaks volumes. That does, because that's a pretty prominent park. And it's interesting. You know what, though? I know a lot of people actually in the Charlotte and North Carolina area. I have relatives down there, and it's funny. All of them love Carowinds. And, you know, they don't even start talking other amusement parks until they get up to Busch Gardens. But, yeah, you're not alone.
Carowinds, you've got Dollywood's about a four-hour drive, which love Dollywood. Dollywood is fantastic. You want to talk about another park that kind of has that little bit of everything, great food, great rides,
great shows. You know, it's funny, Andrew, that you mentioned that, because you know how we said Busch Gardens would be a Disney dupe? I mean... Clearly, the ultimate Disney dupe is Dollywood, and Pigeon Forge is a really, really cool place. I mean, outside the park as well. I'm a backpacker. There's all kinds of outdoor stuff. You got this great park. There's all kinds of theming. Yeah, you can't say enough good things about Dollywood, and I think that would be another dupe, a Disney dupe.
For sure. I don't want to say Pigeon Forge and Gatlinburg and the surrounding area are weird, but they're quirky. They're quirky in their own unique way. And it's the way I've described it to people is Myrtle Beach without the beach. So you've got all of the tourists, you know, your Ripley's, believe it or not, and all your mini golf courses and things like that. But I was there last year for a friend of mine's bachelor party. And yeah, we did a little bit of everything. We did the touristy stuff. We walked that downtown strip. We went on a hike.
Yeah. Did you have breakfast at a pancake house?
See, we did it.
Yeah. There's so many good pancake houses out there too. Go ahead.
Yeah. So no pancake house. Cause I think we were doing a little bit of sleeping in, but yeah, Dollywood is, it's a great time. And Pigeon Forge is a great time. It's just that it is a very unique place to visit.
And then as far as, other parks that are, you know, let's widen the area a little bit. We talked about the Six Flags parks, and we've talked about the Cedar Fair parks. But, you know, you have others like the Independence. We talked about Hershey. And then we just talked, you mentioned that it's the Hershen family that owns with Dollywood, Kentucky Kingdom, Silver Dollar City. And then you mentioned, was it Wild Adventures? Is that the other one you mentioned?
Down in Valdosta. Yep.
Yeah. So, you know, that's really cool that they offer, you know, those, because those are different than, you know, a Six Flags park or a Cedar Fair park. And then, you know, I mentioned it earlier, you gotta love Hershey Park in Hershey, Pennsylvania. Have you been there?
That is one that is embarrassing to me that I have not gotten to. It is just outside of that range that I would really want to make a driving day trip.
Right.
I think it's about a 7.5-8 hour drive for me. So it's easier to fly, and then you got to fly, you got to deal with all that. I keep telling myself for every year, and I've said this, I feel like every year since about 2018, that this year is the year, and I'm hoping that sooner or later I'm going to get to Hershey Park. But right now I don't have the plans as of yet, and travel for some, you know, at some points between work and budgeting, it's some travel can be a little bit prohibitively expensive, and it's the way the cookie crumbles sometimes. But I'm going to get there. There's a couple of parks in the country. Hershey Park is one. Silver Dollar City in Branson is one. Six Flags Magic Mountain, despite what I had to say about Six Flags. That's another one I really, really want to get to. So there are parks all around the country that I've yet to get to that are kind of known for having some of the greatest coasters and rides and experiences. But that's the beauty of this hobby, is I can just... They'll be there. But you talk about the big parks, there are little parks out there as well. One I want to mention to you, you talked about Cedar Point, which I think is a 5 hour drive ish to the east. But you know, 5 hours to the west of Chicago, there's this little family owned park called Lost Island theme park. And it opened a couple years ago. They had this, this water park out in Waterloo, Iowa. And they've now built this theme park, and that is a fantastic experience.
Wow.
They've got two kind of big name coasters that they brought in from parks, some foreign parks that had closed or the rides had closed. So they ordered these kind of used rides and they installed them. But this is a park that, again, it's in the middle of nowhere in Iowa, and there is a great dark ride, probably the best dark ride at a regional park. It's called Volcano. It's, you know, fantastic. So the good news about all these parks, every park has a story and every park has its own little, they have its own niche, basically. And so if thrill rides are your thing, the big parks are there. If you're looking for something with more charm and more character, something like an Indiana Beach or a Lost Island, or going a little further into Iowa, something like Adventureland Resort. These parks, there's such a charm to them. Both the big and the small parks, I think, they have their charm. They have their associated rides and experiences. But the trick is you got to find them. And once you find them, you're going to tell everybody you want to, like everybody you can about them, just because they were that good.
Another brand that a lot of people wouldn't think in a million years would offer next level roller coasters. And the parent company now, I believe it's called United Parks and Resorts. I'm thinking SeaWorld. We're talking really, really cool roller coasters at SeaWorld in Florida.
Yeah, for sure. And SeaWorld, they are part of United Parks and Resorts, who actually owns Busch Gardens as well. But SeaWorld Orlando specifically, they've branded themselves in recent years as the coaster capital of Orlando. And it's not just lip service. I think, you know, this year they're opening Penguin Trek, which is their third roller coaster in 3 years. Third new roller coaster. So they had Icebreaker in 2022, Pipeline, the surf coaster, that's this kind of new generation stand-up coaster last year, and then Penguin Trek, which is more targeted towards families, but again, it's a prototype ride from the same company who built Pipeline and Mako and Manta and Kraken and a bunch of other coasters in SeaWorld Orlando. But they have kind of cornered the coaster market in Orlando, and Universal Orlando obviously has the Jurassic World Velocicoaster, which is considered by many to be kind of one of the best coasters they've ever ridden in the world.
Yeah, I talked to John from Coaster 101. We talked to him about a year ago on this podcast, and if I'm not mistaken, I think that's his all-time favorite coaster.
He actually wrote a love letter on our website to Velocicoaster. So he
loves it. He said that when I talked to him, he said he was just blown away. And I mean, obviously.
Yes. So it is, it's awesome. It is, It lives up to every bit of hype that everybody is giving it. But for sheer quantity of coasters in the Orlando area, I mean, this new Penguin Trek coaster at SeaWorld Orlando, that'll give them 8, which they can stake claim to the coaster capital of Orlando, because in one park, they've got more coasters than Disney. And I think if you add up all of the roller coasters at Universal Orlando across their two parks, I think SeaWorld still has them beat on quantity. So,
yeah, if I was going to the area, that's where I would opt to go. I'm not as much into maybe the Disney stuff and some of that other stuff. I'd rather, you know, just go straight to the thrills. And since we are talking about Disney, you know, the SeaWorld, like you said, is taking roller coasters to the next level down there. Thoughts on Universal, thoughts on Disney. I mean, they do theming, right? And there are some cool rides, maybe not the extreme roller coasters that we normally would think, but thoughts on those parks.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a Central Florida arms race when it comes to those theme parks. Obviously, for years, Disney has been kind of that generational destination. It's like you want to take your family to Disney, and that's kind of what we as a society have kind of realized about that park. And they've put some really exciting rides and additions in the past decade or so. You know, you've got roller coasters like Tron, where you kind of ride this light cycle, and you kind of lean forward and... So it's got a big straightaway launch, and it's got these dark ride scenes that are great. Their new Guardians of the Galaxy roller coaster at Epcot is another really, really fantastic. It's got these spinning cars on it. But you're spinning, but you're not like free spinning. It's a fantastic ride. Probably the best Disney roller coaster I've ever been on, which is, I mean, that's a low bar to clear.
Yeah, but I would think. I mean, you basically have in for Disney. To me, the two that come to mind are Guardians. Everybody speaks highly of that, and then the other one, Tron, which I hear is great, and I've seen videos on it. But everybody's complaint with that is it's a little on the short side.
It is a little short, but I think that first launch experience makes up for the wait. But real quick, while we're on the subject of the Orlando parks, I really think in the next year or so, once Universal Orlando opens Epic Universe, I think this is going to be the biggest, not threat to Disney, because threat's not the right word, but it's going to be the most competition that Disney has had in years, because they're building out these 5 super immersive areas. There's a, you know, Universal Monsters Land, and there's a Super Mario Land, and How to Train Your Dragon. But it's going to have roller coasters. It's going to have super immersive theming. And it's like, it's going to be the equivalent of 5 Wizarding World of Harry Potter across both Universal Studios Florida and Isles of Adventure. It's 5 lands with that level of theming and attraction. And so with this, there's going to be resort hotels and new dining and all these other things. But once Epic Universe opens, I think this is the first really, really, really big full-scale amusement park that's opened in the United States in a long time. And once that opens, I think the gloves are going to come off, and Disney's going to have to retaliate in some way. I don't know if that's with a 5th gate. I don't know if that's with this blue sky beyond Thunder Mountain that they've talked about for a couple years now. So again, going back to what I said earlier, I think it's a really, really exciting time to be a coaster fan and a theme park fan, because as we kind of can continue to push these limits in theming and ride experiences, we're just going to continue to get great and new and exciting attractions. And as a fan of this industry, it's so fun to get to cover and ride and experience all of these new things.
Well, we've covered a lot of ground today. And as we wrap up today's Gaines podcast, what's your final thoughts on our conversation? I mean, the industry seems to be thriving. The rides keep getting better and better. And there's still a lot of options for people across the country. But your takeaway from our conversation today, Andrew?
Yeah, my takeaway is I think I've hammered it home a little, maybe too much. But it's just a good time to be a fan. I think post-COVID, the tourism is back. And with the tourism comes the capital enhancements and capital improvements that these parks are willing to make. And if you've got a local amusement park, if it's one of the big guys like a Cedar Fair or Six Flags, go visit them. If it's a small park like Indiana Beach or Camden Park in West Virginia or Waldemere up in Eastern Pennsylvania or Western Pennsylvania, like, go visit them too. Because at the end of the day, this industry is about fun. And as a society, fun is something we should be having more of.
Big thanks to Andrew Stillwell, writer and podcast host at Coaster101.com. Again, that's Coaster101.com. Andrew's out of Charlotte, North Carolina. Hey, be sure to subscribe, follow, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts if that's an option for you. I've been told that's podcast gold. Totally appreciate the solid there. And as always, subscribe and turn on those notifications so you know when a new Gains episode drops. We drop Gains episodes on Wednesday mornings, and I look forward to seeing you then.
A News Radio WBBM podcast powered by Odyssey.